the function of distance from the sun through the corona, the magnetic field is plotted here with, again, error bars associated with the, or caused by the noisy spectra. You can see that out at about 1.1 solar radii above the limb, the magnetic field measurement is made at about 5 gauss, or less than 5 gauss. Here the sign is preserved, so it's in the opposite direction. So this is groundbreaking work, but again, it lacks spatial coverage that we would desire. The COMP instrument, on the other hand, has been providing great spatial coverage, in particular using linear polarization of, again, the same iron 13 line at 1075 nanometers. In particular, recent work has looked at the morphology of the magnetic field around a prominence cavity and compared that with some very detailed forward models. So here you see COMP data measuring the direction of the linear polarization with the green ticks, and the amplitude of the linear polarization is the grayscale. So they see a very distinct directional information from their data, as well as amplitude information that fits well with a particular model of the prominence cavity as identified in AIA images. So another key point is that even though from AIA, you may not think this is a very interesting place in the corona, there's a lack of emission, for instance. Using ground-based diagnostics, we find out that it's a critical place to study the magnetic field of the corona. Using helium 10A30, again, just in the near infrared, but now measuring the cool plasma in the corona, Tom Shad is preparing work where he's measured the magnetic field in a very accurate way in one distinct coronal loop. So here the spatial coverage doesn't include the whole corona, but by using stereoscopic methods to identify this, by looking at AIA data and stereo data, he's able to isolate the event to a very particular coronal loop in the atmosphere. Using the FIRS technique, instrument, sorry, built by Haoshan Lin, he's measured the full Stokes polarimetry of the helium 10A30 line. And on the top, you see a rather complicated figure, but here we have intensity, Stokes Q, Stokes U, and Stokes V profiles. This is not a slit spectra, but rather Tom has constructed sets of spectra with height through the corona. So here we have something near the chromosphere, and up here about 70 megameters into the corona. What he sees is a flow along this particular loop. With increasing velocity, it accelerates pretty close to solar gravitational acceleration. And so you can see that the redshift for this event is enormous. The lower row shows inversions of the spectra using the helix code that he's been applying. Here we have intensity, Stokes Q, Stokes U, and Stokes V. And as outputs from the helix inversions that he's done, he's developed several diagnostics of the magnetic field. In particular, we're plotting the magnetic field here versus height, again, in the corona. Below 10 megameters, the line actually goes into emission in this event, so we don't plot any of that information. But he sees strong magnetic fields as mapped out by this cool plasma going through one particular coronal loop at above about 500 gauss at only 20 megameters height. But then when we get out to about 1.1 solar radii, we're getting values that are below 50 gauss, roughly consistent order of magnitude with the Lin results. So these three techniques, or these three instruments, have allowed us to start to probe the magnetic field in the corona and point to the ability of ground-based work to actually make a direct measurement of this parameter, this very important parameter. What diagnostics will the ATST use? Well, we're going to use infrared lines, and these three lines that I've just discussed will be available to the ATST, iron 13 lines and 10A30 to probe the cool stuff. But there are other lines, in particular, silicon 10 line at 1.4 microns, and then a silicon 9 line out here at 3.9 microns. There may be other fainter lines that ATST will find, and we may be able to use those as well. But these are the five that we think are going to provide the most key diagnostics. The important thing to remember, too, is that even though we have fewer lines to select than you would have in the EUV, the Zeeman effect is based or is sensitive to splitting, and so that splitting increases as G times lambda. So even though we only have a few probes, each of these probes is 100 times more sensitive than the probes in the EUV to the Zeeman splitting. And as you heard this morning, we have a number of instruments with the ATST, the DL-NIRSP and the cryo-NIRSP are the key instruments to study coronal spectral lines. So in the corona, and you can see that this data was actually taken with the McMath Pierce telescope, not a coronagraph. This was from an eclipse in 1994. So you can see that we get some rather poor signal to noise, although the line is still detected in this data. But the coronal measurements from the ground are background limited measurements. And that means, if I can summarize, that the noise in the background photons dominates the noise in the signal that you want to study. So I apologize for the thin lines here, but what we have here are just a couple of simulations where we have a coronal emission line, in this case with zero background. And here I've subtracted that zero background and blown up the scale. It's got a brightness of 40 millionths. And so you can see that we get a pretty good Gaussian profile even when we include photon noise. But now as you increase the background from either atmospheric or telescopic stray light, the noise in the background changes as well. And even though I know from my simulation what that background is, and I perfectly subtract it, I can't subtract the noise from that background, at least for one exposure. As we go to higher and higher backgrounds, the noise gets worse, and our coronal signal disappears into this background noise. Now, this is random, so what we can do is integrate with time to eliminate this. But in a corona where we have a lot of dynamic events, and also with our instrumentation, which is slit spectra, where we want to scan a region, we really want to minimize that time. So a lot of effort has gone into choosing a site for the ATST with a low sky background, but also minimizing the background in the telescope itself. And as you can imagine, measuring the physical parameters that you want to know, velocity, density, and magnetic field, depend critically on fitting a Gaussian and then on the signal-to-noise of your resulting coronal spectrum. So the 12 members of the first coronal working group with ATST looked at this in a quantitative way, and we published in 2004 in Solar Physics a statement where we take, or at that time, took what we would know about the ATST instrument and the site and work that into what we would have in terms of sensitivity for measuring the physical parameters of interest in the corona. So you can see for instrument parameters that are listed here, the micro roughness, the dust coverage of the telescope, and also the figure of M1 are the three principal scattered light contributors. And knowing what we knew roughly about the sites that we were looking at that time, we found that at a height of 1.1 solar radii, we could measure magnetic field at the 1 sigma noise level of 30 Gauss in a 1 arcsecond squared pixel for 1 second integration time. To get down to 5 Gauss, of course, we need to get a factor of 6 in signal to noise, so multiply this by a factor of 36 in time. But the ATST is going to give us some very exciting results in terms of magnetic sensitivity quickly. We can also calculate the intensity noise. The two iron 13 lines, the ratio of those lines can give us an electron diagnostic, and so we have a noise level for the electron density, and also velocity. So what he mentioned, looking at MHD waves, having velocity detection with a 1 sigma noise of 37 meters per second, I think at 1 second time cadence, opens up some exciting possibilities for wave studies. So this is one of the things I think that's driving the science behind the ATST looking at the corona. Another issue, and you've heard a lot about this during this week, is to look at small structures in the corona. Heating mechanisms that are proposed operate on small spatial scales, but there is some debate about what those critical size scales are. If I could summarize just a few works, some important spectral diagnostics were used by Brooks et al., along with high-resolution imaging and models, to estimate that some loops, or to find that some loops are well fit with a single loop of 1,000 kilometer diameter, or some others fit with a collection of smaller 300 kilometer diameter loops. Results from the high-C rocket flight showed several loops, again with diameters on the order of several hundred kilometers, 700 kilometers or 800 kilometers, using high-resolution imaging now. But what do ground-based measurements tell us? Well, as Wenda pointed out, the NST telescope has looked at helium-10830, so at least in terms of cool coronal loops, they see structures that are at the resolution limit, about 100 kilometers in width. They associate dynamic events in these cool loops with dynamic events in the hot loops, and so they question if the hot loops may also show structure at this small size scale. And finally, having a 4-meter class coronagraph while it's an exciting idea, has been done before, of course. And of course, Suraj Kuchmi did it. During the 1991 eclipse, the 3.6 meter CFHT telescope was used for 4 minutes to study the corona. And an interesting result from Zhukov et al. In 2000 showed a coronal plasmoid. This is white light. We don't know the temperature. But we do know that it was highly structured, very small, a few hundred kilometers across, with internal structure, they claim, at the seeing limit of about 400 kilometers. So there's evidence, again, from another ground-based source that we have structures in the corona that are smaller than we're seeing from the space missions. So the second science topic is that the ATSD, I think, is positioned to make really critical observations at high resolution of the coronal structures. At first, we're going to start out with the seeing limit that we get on Haleakala, but that still puts us at very low spatial scales, 150 to 300 kilometer resolution. Also, as Wendao mentioned, doing AO in the corona is going to be very tricky. There are some things that we can use, for instance, prominence, background stars, or background planets, even laser guide stars. In 2019, they may be available for purchase by amateurs by that point, right? So there's some tricks that we can use that we're investigating because it's just such a huge fundamental breakthrough. If we can get AO working in the corona at 1,000 nanometers, we have a resolution of about 40 kilometers. So that should really address the high resolution questions that we have with the corona. And just want to put up some reference material here. If you're interested, please email me or look at these references and tell us your ideas about studying the corona. Thank you.
I don't know the answer to this question, but that's why I ask it. Have you looked at what ALMA can do about the coronal observations, about the magnetic field and the corona, and how that might fit in with what the ATSD is capable of?
I wish I had time to look at that. There are some experts, Dr. White, in the audience who could better address that, but no, I'm afraid I have not.